The bombing at Atlanta's Centennial Park was not the first terror attack on U.S. soil, not by a long shot. But it did change how investigators and experts viewed domestic terrorism and the threat of terrorism here in our home country. Malcolm Nance joins us, a former U.S. intelligence and counterterrorism official, now serves as the executive director of the Terror Asymmetrics Project on Strategy, Tactics, and Radical Ideology. He joins us via Skype. Hi, Malcolm.
Good morning.
And also on the phone is Anthony Lemieux. He's Associate Professor of Communication at Georgia State University and lead researcher of the university's Transcultural Conflict and Violence Program. Hi, Tony.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let me give you both the same first question to start with, and I'll go to you first, Malcolm. How did the attack on the 1996 Olympics change our understanding of and approach to terrorism, domestic terrorism?
Well, at the time of the bombing, there were 14 joint terrorism task forces around the United States, which the FBI was the lead agency. Those organizations were well suited for the level of terrorist operation that's both domestic and international in the United States at that time. If you remember the 1990s, which today I look fondly on as what we would call the good old bad days. Certainly, the terrorism we see today is an order of magnitude different. But at that time, the FBI's lead agency would operate out of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, do similar investigations as they do today, using local resources. And of course, they would try to prevent any acts. And if an act occurred, they would intervene and carry out the initial investigations, as we saw in the Centennial Park bombing. It didn't change much after the Centennial Park bombing. There was a level of intensity. Atlanta itself had a JTTF in the city, and really things wouldn't change dramatically until after 9/11, when we went from 14 JTTFs to now over 106.
And JTTF stands for Joint Terrorism Task Force. Then
let
me bring that to you, Tony, because, of course, Malcolm just mentioned 9/11, and I think most of us assume that our approach to terror changed dramatically. But before 9/11, Eric Rudolph was, when you thought of a terrorist, was kind of the image that came in your mind. We had the Oklahoma City bombings. We had other terror attacks that occurred on U.S. soil, and Eric Rudolph kind of fit that profile, did he not?
Well, in the sense that, yes, I mean, I think there's the quick answer to the question, but, it's not quite so clear-cut. I mean, one of the things that we learned was that, oftentimes you'd hear about, clinic bombings, and, especially with the Army of God, the kind of group that he was affiliated with.
Yeah, extremist anti-abortion group. Go ahead.
Yeah, so these kinds of attacks were referred to as terrorist attacks, but more often thought of as either shootings or bombings, and it didn't quite give us the sense of systematicity to kind of put the pieces together the way that I think we've started to shift towards, certainly in the post 9/11 era, but certainly less with the case of attacks that aren't committed by Muslim perpetrators. So I think there's a piece of it there. It's still a little bit trickier to put those dots together, but we're certainly more sensitive to that now.
And Malcolm, a few things changed after Eric Rudolph's bombing. And one of the things that many people point to, and this certainly wasn't fixed by 9/11, was the fact that there was so little coordination between law enforcement agencies and even getting the news out to police that there may be a bomb on site was almost impossible at the time. How much did the Olympic bombing change that?
Well, the Olympic bombing changed the relationship between between the FBI and certainly local law enforcement. You see, we had that unfortunate event of Richard Jewell, the security guard who actually at the time was a hero. He actually did warn people of the bombing, and the investigation went off the rails and started accusing him of perhaps being involved in the bombing itself. Basically because the FBI didn't have the ability to reach deeply down into communities on a broad scale like we do today. I train law enforcement all over the United States, and I just did a joint terrorism intelligence training program where I had 200 local law enforcement officers at the street level who all form a terrorism liaison officer program in New York State. And that doesn't include the hundreds and hundreds of others. Right now, the National Joint Terrorism Task Force, which fuses in all of the law enforcement in the U.S. and puts out the circulars, has over 4,000 intelligence officers tasked to it. So as you can see, I mean, when you go from, you know, a street level Atlantic police officers, you know, trying to suss out and gumshoe, as they call it, you know, the basics of this investigation, and the FBI coming in from on high, those two organizations really didn't mesh well at all, because there were, you know, it was really not terrorism specialists in Atlanta actually fusing together with terrorism specialists in the FBI. That now has to a certain extent disappeared. One other interesting point that was made: the definition of terrorism was not universally used when domestic terrorist acts were being carried out. I mean, the Army of God had organized, which is the anti-abortion rights group, formed in 1982 and had done dozens of attacks. And as you know, the other guests mentioned, they were called bombings or shootings or mailings to abortion clinics, when every one of those things definitely reached the definition of the act of terrorism. I'm actually holding in my hands the 1996 FBI's United States report on terrorism, and every one of their acts would meet that. And we still have that problem today of clearly defining terrorism as terrorism, whether it's an American or foreign.
Tony, we only have about 45 seconds left, but can you address that particular issue? Because there has been a debate in recent years over when to call something terrorism and when to call someone a terrorist.
I think that is probably one of the really critical issues, because if we fail to do that consistently, it has a lot of negative consequences, not the least of which is it confuses the issues. It confuses us with regard to how we would either investigate or prosecute, or even the kind of nature of coverage. So it gives us a skewed sense. So some of the groups, the Patriot movements, the sovereign citizens, some of the groups are perpetrating acts, particularly going after law enforcement, and that doesn't necessarily get considered in the same wheelhouse of terrorism. And to Malcolm's point, I mean, this very much fits in there. And from a law enforcement perspective, we know that's one of their huge concerns, because there is that intent and there's capability there that can be acted on in this particular way. So that's where I think we really need to make sure we've got that understanding fairly tight in use of that word as consistent as possible.
Anthony Liu is a Georgia State University Associate Professor of Communication, lead researcher of the university's Transcultural Conflict and Violence Program. Malcolm Nance is Executive Director of the Terror Asymmetrics Project on Strategy, Tactics, and Radical Ideology. Thanks so much to both of you.
Our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
This is On Second Thought.